Welcome to Street Talk, a public affairs presentation of Cumulus Media, aired on our Cumulus stations in Syracuse. Street Talk is a weekly show keeping you in touch with the individuals and organizations that work for and serve our community. We're your hosts, Ted and Amy. Well, even before the COVID vaccine conversation, the question of whether or not to get a flu shot has always been a part of this time of year. But Cerise Marotta, director of the nonprofit Vaccinate Your Family, knows firsthand how serious getting the flu can be.
So my son Joseph was 5 years old in 2009, and he was a healthy, happy little boy. And unfortunately, he caught flu. He ended up in the hospital. And 10 days later, he lost his life to flu. So as you can imagine, that has forever changed the trajectory of our family's lives. And really, I had no idea how dangerous flu was before Joseph passed away. And so I think it's really motivated me over the past 13 years to help raise awareness about the seriousness of flu and the importance of annual flu vaccination.
I think you're right. I think a lot of people, I mean, obviously, no, it's not fun getting the flu. But when you think about it, especially someone who's very little like that, or, you know, compromised in any way, a lot of times you just can't fight it off.
Yeah, exactly. I think there are certainly, you know, be it young children, pregnant people, older adults, there are certain groups who are at a higher risk level. But I think the take-home message here is that we essentially are all at risk when it comes to flu. And Joseph is a perfect example. He was 5 years old. He was healthy. He had no pre-existing health conditions. And unfortunately, that is the story that I've heard from many people over the past 13 years who have been, you know, impacted themselves by flu, is, you know, their loved ones have been, in many instances, healthy. Not to say that certainly people with chronic conditions, such as diabetes, lung disease, et cetera, those folks want to be extra careful and make sure that they really prioritize their flu vaccination every year. But, you know, at the end of the day, we're all at risk. So we all need to do what we can to protect not only ourselves, but our loved ones and our community members as well.
I mean, it sounds like, yes, this has been a big crusade for you. It must be frustrating, because I know even sometimes having conversations with people in my life regarding any kind of vaccines, it's just something, I mean, I don't think that they back up a lot of information. I think they just have like this preconception in their head. Is that something that you deal with frequently?
It is. And from where I come from, I always try to be very open in those types of conversations in terms of, my job is not to judge anyone, right? We are all doing the best we can with the information that we have. And what I try to do is ask them, you know, what are your questions and concerns about vaccines? Whether we're talking about flu vaccines or any other type of vaccines, I think it's really important when you're having those types of conversations to first figure out what are their questions and concerns. And it's okay to have questions and concerns. I've had them. I've asked, you know, my daughter is older now, but throughout her life, I have had conversations with her pediatrician. Okay, I know she needs this vaccine, but let's talk about it a little bit. I have some questions, and that is perfectly okay. So I think when you really lead with empathy and you really listen, right, I think those conversations need to be multi-directional, right? We need to listen as much as we talk. But I think for me personally, I try to figure out what their questions or concerns are. If I can help provide some information to them, that's what I try to do. And when I share Joseph's story, I always do it in a very empathic, compassionate way. I don't use it to scare people. I just want them to be informed, because I wasn't informed. I had no idea how dangerous flu was. And so at the end of the day, when I share Joseph's story, I say to people, hey, this is a sad story. My story is one of thousands of stories. And I'm sharing it with you because I want you to feel empowered to make an informed decision about vaccination for yourself and your family. And it's ultimately their choice. And I try to respect that, but I also try to make sure that they have all the information they need to make the best possible choice for themselves and their families.
What do you say for people that say, I got the flu shot and then I immediately got the flu?
Well, I'm going to laugh a little bit here, Amy, because I'm also a scientist. I was a scientist for over 16 years, even though I now work in public health. And I hear this a lot of times. And the gist of it is, it's biologically impossible to get flu from a flu shot. So what happens when you get a flu shot, it's basically teaching our bodies, right? Imagine like, okay, I'm going to go out and run a marathon. You're going to train for that marathon. You're not just going to, you know, jump up, put on your running shoes one day and go out and do it. So that's how vaccines work. They train our bodies to recognize that when we are exposed to these viruses or bacteria in the future, our body is ramped up and ready to fight that. So when you get a flu vaccine, it takes your body about 2 weeks after you get vaccinated to really ramp up to that full immunity. So the way that flu vaccines are made, there's several different flu vaccines and they use different technologies, but basically it's impossible because there is no full kind of intact virus in that flu shot. So when someone gets a flu shot and feels a little bit yucky, which is totally possible, it's happened to me, that's basically your immune response doing what it's supposed to. Your body is reacting to that flu shot, it's gearing up, and you might feel a little bit yucky for a day or so. And when I say yucky, that's not a technical term. I mean, you might have a headache, you might have soreness at the injection site, you might feel a little bit achy for like a day or so. That's not flu. When someone comes to me and says, oh, I got my flu shot, and gosh, I think I got the flu, I'm like, you will know if you have the flu. It's basically, you feel like you got hit by a truck, you are down and out for at least a week, if not more. And obviously, like Joseph's story, there can also be those severe outcomes. So I would say, you know, it stinks to get that immune response because you feel a little bit yucky, but that's nothing that, you know, taking a little pain relief, just taking it easy on the couch for a day, that will, you know, at least ensure that you are protected throughout the season. So it's still nowhere near what you would feel like if you got the flu and you were not protected. I would like to mention Vaccinate Your Family. This is an organization that I am working with now. And, you know, we have been around for 30 years. Our mission is simple, yet very difficult. We really look to protect people of all ages from vaccine preventable diseases. All vaccine preventable diseases, not just flu. So what I'm doing here is really working with families like mine that have been impacted by vaccine preventable disease, really working on educating the public about the benefits of vaccination. And it's really important to me personally and professionally because everything that I am able to do every day, hopefully we're reaching people with this important information. And hopefully they're going out and getting vaccinated once they feel comfortable and they're making those decisions. And at the end of the day, I really feel like it's important for us to do that because we're saving lives. I don't want anyone else to have a story like mine. You know, every night I sit at my dinner table, I have an empty chair. Joseph would be 18 now. He should be in his freshman year of college. I'm missing that. I am missing all the things. My daughter misses her brother. So to save someone from my path, that is what I'm trying to do at the end of the day.
Well, thank you for being so personal and for sharing that. And I hope that we can reach a lot of people.
If people are looking for additional information on vaccines, be it flu or any other vaccine or vaccine preventable disease, I would encourage them to visit vaccinateyourfamily.org. There's a lot of information on there. Along with that information, you will see stories like mine of people who have been impacted. So again, we just hope that people take advantage of that information so they can make informed decisions about vaccination.
See more at vaccinateyourfamily.org. Well, the waterways of Central New York may be cooling down, but there's still plenty of activity on them and all year round. Dave White of the New York Sea Grant is retiring after 38 years of educating the public on New York's waterways.
Kind of bittersweet. What are we going to do without you around here?
What am I going to do without you? I mean, this has been, you know, it's been a great opportunity. I mean, it's been a great run. So, yeah, as I've told people, you know, I'll have two tears in my eyes, one of sadness and one of joy. I mean, it's been a great career, great fun, and great people.
I was thinking about you when it comes to filling your position. Because I feel like you have been on the waterways since you were tiny. And so it's not just being educated, it's being educated because that's been your life for so long.
It has. And, you know, people go, you know, your love of boating. I grew up boating, and I became a certified boat safety instructor in 1979. So, you know, when boating issues really came to the forefront, we did some research, which is the base of our organization, that really talked about the needs of boaters to understand better environmental, better safety. I'd been teaching it for years as a volunteer instructor, and so it just became natural. And then, you know, working with great folks in the Coast Guard Auxiliary Power Squadron, Gene Little, and all the times you and I have been together on the radio and at the fair and, you know, those kind of things. It's, you know, just been a great opportunity. So, yeah, I've you know, grew up around the water, have a great respect for it from a safety standpoint, but also a great respect for it from a conservation ethic that we really have to be thinking about. And that, to me, is probably the biggest change I've seen in four decades is, I think we all have that ethic.
I mean, I was going to ask you the changes, because I feel like you mentioned safety. You know, back in the day, it was kind of like you could get behind the wheel of a boat and you could pretty much do what you wanted to do.
Yeah.
I feel like safety has definitely improved for the good, you know, since you...
It has, because boating has changed so much. I mean, I love when I do presentations about it and I get my, you know, my ski belt out that we used to ski with. And people go, what is that? And I go, this is what we used to wear to ski. And they go, what? You know, but it evolved. I mean, I grew up on a, you know, 12-foot, you know, 25-horsepower engine boat. And now, you know, we're on, you know, 3-person jet skis that can go 60 miles an hour. Great. Great fun, great opportunity. I mean, so we have to be thinking about, as we get all these new technologies, how do we help ourselves have fun without even thinking about it from a safety standpoint, making sure everybody's safe and secure? And that, to me, is always the best part. If when you're out on the water, whether you're swimming, you're worrying about riptides, you're boating, whatever it might be, you're not thinking about it because it's just natural. And if you're not thinking about it, then it's not like, oh, I got to think about safety. You shouldn't have to think about safety. To me, it should just be a part of it. And, you know, with, you know, folks that live, work, and play along the lake, I think that, again, is a big change, is more and more people, they don't have to think about what they're doing because it's just part of what we do now. If we're going to help conserve the environment, you know, we want to make sure we do the right thing with our shoreline if we're a shoreline property owner. That, to me, is the biggest change in four decades, is what we think about that we don't have to anymore. It's just part of who we are.
Does it scare you, though, just with the changes you've seen, just with the waterways? And let's say, I mean, we had a camp on Lake Ontario for many years, and just the shoreline has changed so much. You know, we ended up selling it because of the erosion.
Right.
I mean, so that seems like there's some great ways to embrace the environment, but there's changes that you really can't ignore.
There's changes that you can't ignore, and we always have to be thinking about what's next and how we plan and prepare for it. And, you know, yes, all the changes we've seen, you have to remember the shore of Lake Ontario used to be in Rome, New York. So it receded.
It's not like
so
is
it
just
coming
changed
back?
It,
right, right. I mean, so
ago.
You know, depend. You know, as they always say, you know, what is your context of change? You know, an opportunity for that. And in some cases, you know, you can't fight Mother Nature. She is going to win. It's just how can you extend that, you know, time period, if it is, or be thinking about how do you have to change to conform to that? Because, you know, we have built in areas that, you know, we're all legal and we all did the right thing. I mean, I have a, you know, family camp in the Finger Lakes. So, you know, I'm not besmirching anybody. What we all did was legal and normal at the time. But many of us weren't thinking ahead 40 or 50 years as to, well, what will it look like then? I think more and more people, that's what they're thinking now. And my good colleagues that do erosion work or community planning work in Sea Grant, that's what they're helping communities think about, is we need to be thinking about what's next, because today's easy. You look out, go, well, that's the water level. That's what I'm going to do. But what might it be? And I always remind people, it's been high and it's been low. I mean, I just showed a colleague of mine yesterday, you know, the flooding of 1993 pictures. And he went, 93? I thought it was like 17 and 20 and 19. I go, well, in your lifetime, that's what you see. But, you know, in my lifetime, it's every 10 years kind of thing. And so here's the 93 pictures when, you know, the Wright's Landing in Oswego was completely underwater. And people forget that because their time frame is, when have I been around it? Yeah. So, you know, it's those kind of things. So, you know, I'm going through a lot of the history records, and I'm loving that the colleagues that I work with want to have that information because they said we have to learn from that history because that's going to help us better plan, prepare, and continue to use. Because I am one, we need to continue to use it. And we're going to continue to live along the shore. We're going to continue to boat, do all these great, wonderful things. So how do we just do it thinking differently? And I think people are, in large regard, thinking differently about those things.
You mentioned technology, and I mean, obviously, that has changed so much. Even from when I've talked to you, the things that are possible now, not even technology, but like your blow-up kayaks, inflatable kayaks that feel like they're real boats. Yeah. I mean, just amazing advances with so many different things like that.
It is, and that's what has always excited me, and you know, and being with you and when we talk about these things, because that just gives more people the opportunity. You know, and that's the one thing is everybody has an opportunity to enjoy these resources. And I have found it fascinating that one of the first things people have said when I announced several months ago I was going to retire, and they go, oh, where are you moving to? I've been fascinated by that. And I've looked at them going, what? And they go, oh, when I retire, I'm going to move to X. And I go, have you ever visited there? Oh, I hear it's a great place. And I just look at them and go, I'm not going to move any place because, you know, right here in the studio with you today, I can leave and I can go to some of the best freshwater boating and fishing and landscapes in the Finger Lakes area. I can go up to the canal and go anywhere navigable in the world. I can go up to Lake Ontario and enjoy all of the things a great lake provides. And I can go to the Adirondacks and go to one of the highest peaks in the United States. Pick a state and tell me where I can have all that in a 2-hour drive and I'll move tomorrow. No one can. And that's what people forget because we just take it for granted because it's here. And I love, as I've seen during this time, people have turned their front door to our waters. It used to be our back door. What are we going to throw in it? What are we going to do with it? Now, you know, again, over the last 4 decades, I watch people turn. It's our front door. And we're taking a lot more care of our front lawn than we used to our back lawn. And that, to me, has been exciting to be a part of. And I continue to see that go. And as new technologies come, it opens that front door to more and more people, which is what we should be all about because we have some of the best freshwater, natural, terrestrial, aquatic resources in the world right here. And I always remind people of that. And they go, oh, I guess you're right because we just take it for granted.
Well, and I think water or lack of has made such a major impact in this, well, not this area, but this country for the last couple of years. I mean, you look out west, you know, when we are discussing what's going to happen later, it's like, we got to go somewhere. Should we move part-time is where there's water? Like, why would you not want to be where there's water or that I'm not sure in the future it's going to be there.
Right.
You know?
And I've been blessed in my career and personal life that in my career, I have visited 43 states, 16 Caribbean islands, 2 Hawaiian islands, and 2 Samoa islands. And I remember when my wife and I were in Colorado, and we were there for 2 weeks. I was there for a conference. She flew out, and we were then touring around. And we went to the highest island or highest lake in Colorado. And we were sitting there, and I went, that's it. And she goes, what? And I go, there's been something weird about this vacation. We were like 4 or 5 days into it. I said, I couldn't figure out what it was. I think it was Grand Lake was the name. We were sitting there and then we went out on a boat ride. I said, this is the first vacation that we had ever taken in our lives that was not revolved around water. Always gone to the beach, always gone boating, gone to the ocean, gone to lakes. So, I mean, loved it. Have been back 3 times. But as I sat there, I went, that's been different for me because it wasn't water-based. And I mean, again, you know, those are the things that you just strike you. I mean, to this day, I remember saying that, like, okay, Sam, I am so attuned to the water because professionally, obviously, but personally, I love it as well. So, yeah, it is all those things that come into play.
Now, what do you think you're going to miss the most regarding talking about or seeing or being part of?
You. I realize I'm going through 38 years of stuff and, you know, you can get emotional when you start to go through that. And as I've now started to say to people, you know, they said, what were you successful at? And I said, I was successful at nothing because everything I've done, I did with some of the greatest people in Central New York. I mean, I can, you know, do all I want. I've said I was a mouthpiece. I was a face. I was in front of a room and I was behind the scenes with all those other great people. You know, and people you and I have talked about things that we've done. But, you know, I could do all I want to talk about these great resources. But if it wasn't for you helping me get that word out and having fun with it, because, I mean, we've also talked about a lot of serious issues. And, you know, you can talk about them with levity to help through it. But that, I think that also helps people understand it, because we don't need to take people further down. You know, we can help lift them up. And so I say that in all sincerity. That's what I'm going to miss the most, but that's what's made me successful, if I have been, is you and the folks over at Bridge Street and the folks over at TV3 and others here in Central New York. But I do this across the area. You know, and it's those people that have helped me get the word out. It's the Gene Littles from the Coast Guard Auxiliary that I know you've talked to before. You know, those kind of folks that have helped me, because I couldn't do it alone. And I'm realizing that now. It's not me. It's truly a we. And I'm telling all of my colleagues, and I can't wait to tell the person who does, you know, they bring in to, you know, take over, if you will. Build on that, because that's what makes you successful, is all those great people, because that they bring things to the table that I certainly couldn't bring. But
well,
I can,
David,
help them get
we're
it.
We're going to miss you immensely. I don't know if you can be replaced. I'm not sure. I might dabble. I'm not sure. But it's been great to work with you. You know, you're one of my favorites. And
absolutely.
I think you said it perfectly, because you bring us so much information, and yet it's entertaining to listen to. And that's what it's all about, so that people are not feeling like, you know, they're being schooled.
Right.
It's more like, hey, how about that? I learned about that this morning.
I learned early in my teaching career, which I did before I came to work at Cornell, is, you know, people argue with me, but it's 90% entertainment and 10% education. And if you can get that 10% into them because of the 90%, you've won the day. Because I can depress the best of them. I mean, you know, I don't have to worry about that, because it's just easy to do. But, you know, uplifting them to really think about, okay, what's next? How do we go forward? So it's been a great ride for me, and I'm looking forward to putting some footprints in the sand, as they say, as we go next. And I'll still be around, because I'm not leaving New York, so you never know where I'll pop up
we'll
again.
We'll see you on the Central New York waterways.
You absolutely will.
See more at nycgrant.org. Well, that's it for this week's edition of Street Talk. If you have an issue to discuss, or an event or nonprofit organization to promote, or to find out more information about something you've heard on this or past week's programs, call us at area code 315-472-0200 or email amy.robbins@cumulus.com. For events, allow 2 weeks in advance. Street Talk has been a public affairs presentation of Cumulus Media. We're Ted and Amy. Thanks for joining us each week here on Street Talk.
Titus and Tate, a podcast from two obsessed basketball lovers.
One of the serious items is that the draft age is going to drop from 19 to 18, and high school kids are going to once again be able to go straight to the NBA.
Yeah.
How dead does this make college basketball? Because we know college basketball is dead. Is it even more dead?
Yeah.
Are they just throwing more dirt?
No, we're six feet deep right now. Yes.
Who has had a longer funeral? Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah, now that is a good question.
The Titus and Tate podcast, wherever you listen.